All right, everybody, welcome to Wednesday night. We're so glad you're here. We are in the middle of a series focusing in on the five areas of spiritual health. Really, as I said last week, this entire series comes from a conversation I was having recently with somebody in which I realized that there is a grid for spiritual health and spiritual maturity that I use that I'm not sure we've talked about recently, and so I really want to make sure that we focus on this. We're talking about these five areas. We're talking about worship, discipleship, fellowship, ministry, and evangelism. And the idea here is that when you're thinking about what it means for you to continue maturing as a follower of Jesus, when you're thinking about what it means for you to get closer to Jesus in your daily life, one of the things I want you to be focusing on and the question that I want you to be asking yourself is, which of these am I the weakest in? So, for example, if you listen to worship music 37 hours a week, but you haven't invited a friend to church in the last 10 months, and you're asking yourself, how do I grow as a follower of Jesus? Adding a 38th hour of worship music would not be the best decision for your spiritual maturity. It would be a far better decision for your spiritual maturity for you to make an intentional effort to invite friends to church. So the question you're asking yourself is, as we work through the idea of each of these five things, which one do I need to grow in? And a basic pattern for growing as a follower of Jesus is to constantly come back to these five areas and ask yourself, which one am I the weakest in, and what do I have to do to get a little bit stronger? So tonight we're going to be talking about discipleship. And whenever I think about discipleship, one of the things I think about is a buddy of mine lives up in Maine. He is just an amazing guy, and I love him. But you know, what is very funny to me is how much he loves Disney. He is a giant, giant Disney fan. When he got married, they went to Disney World on their honeymoon. That's not a particularly unusual, but he does in fact have a giant Disney tattoo. And when his first child came along, they named their first child after a Disney character. And then when their second child came along, they named their second child after a Disney character. And as I watch all of this, one of the things I love about him is that he knows how to make his whole life about loving something. He knows how to let his love for Disney invade his entire life. And I'll tell you right now, the way he loves Disney is nothing compared to the way he loves Jesus. There is no question that Jesus is the center of his universe. He is a godly man and a godly husband and a godly father, and he's just a great guy. But that is a great example in a not particularly spiritual context of what discipleship is all about. Discipleship is what happens when you become formed around a particular person or idea. Jesus said this once about discipleship in John chapter 8. He said, John chapter 8 says this, Jesus said to the people who believed in him, "You are truly my disciples if you remain faithful to my teachings, and you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free." See, I want to talk about discipleship tonight specifically because everyone who comes to a small group probably already believes on some level. And in this particular moment, Jesus is talking to a group of people who already believed just like we all probably believe. See, it was a pretty similar audience. They were able to or willing to say, yes, we believe in you. And what he had to say to those people that day as his disciples may have a lot to offer us when we think about how do we grow in discipleship, in relationship to Jesus. So first of all, let's take a little bit of time to think about and talk about what discipleship is really all about. First and foremost, discipleship has to do with truth. When we talk about Christian discipleship has to do with truth. Jesus said, "You are truly my disciples if you remain faithful to my teachings, and you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free." The word truth is in that just couple of sentences, three different times, and they all tie back to this idea of Jesus' teachings. This is such a powerful idea for us to talk about for a moment, because we have to acknowledge that there is such a thing as truth. Truth is a real thing that actually matters. You know, this is so easy for us to acknowledge in practical terms. I was walking down the street today, and I was walking from Market Street, from the old Shaw's Plaza over on Market Street over to the church on Monroe Street, and I walked by the corner, and it said the temperature, and the temperature gauge said 61 degrees, and I thought to myself, you know, that just doesn't feel right. And, you know, one of the things that's amazing about truth in kind of the outside realm, in the realm of the world outside of our own brains, is we all know that there is an accurate representation of reality. And when we talk about truth, that's what we mean. Truth is an accurate representation of reality. So when I walked by that temperature gauge and it said 61 degrees, and I thought to myself, you know, it doesn't feel like 61 degrees, it doesn't matter what I feel like. Either it is, in fact, 61 degrees outside, or it is not 61 degrees outside. It can't be 61 degrees for me and 50 degrees for you and 90 degrees for the person next to you. Now, we might all have different reactions to 61 degrees. We might all come from different places, and so some of us might feel like 61 degrees is cold. Some of us might feel like 61 degrees is warm. As a matter of fact, it's always interesting to me that at the beginning of the summer, 61 degrees always feels very wonderful to me. And then by fall, 61 degrees feels awful to me. I would prefer it to be warmer. So our perspective on reality might change, but there is still an underlying observable, recordable, unarguable reality that we can either faithfully or unfaithfully speak to. So if that digital thermometer there on the corner of Monroe Street were to say 61 and 23, that would not be accurate. It was 61, that's what it was. There is truth. Where people get confused is they start to think that in situations where we're talking about spiritual realities, those are somehow more subjective. Those are somehow more personal. So I can think what I think about God, and you can think about what you think about God. But what one of the things Jesus is pointing out here is that his teachings reveal truth to us, particularly spiritual truth, truth about who God is, truth about the nature of the universe, truth about human nature. And there is a truth. So you never get to say, well, my truth is, or your truth is. There is one truth, and ultimately, it is Jesus's truth. It is God's truth. The other thing that I think is powerful about this idea of truth, not only is there truth, but the idea of truth is good. You know, we live in a society as all societies are, that has certain cultural norms. Certain things that appear normal because everybody's doing them. But if you were to reflect on the way that our society responds to leadership, or the way our society responds to commitments, or the way that our society responds to responsibility, or the way that our society defines relationships, or the way that our society even defines something as broad and vague as health. One of the things that's incredibly important is that Jesus' truth offers an alternative to cultural norms. See, if you are born into a society that has the same message, that gives you the same message from the time you're born till the time you die, you very well might be like a fish in the water who doesn't even notice the water exists. You might not notice the messages that your culture communicates to you, even if they are harmful or destructive messages. So the wonderful thing about Jesus' offer of truth to us is that through offering us the truth, Jesus offers to rescue us, not just from ourselves, but from our social and cultural contexts in which we are stuck without ever even knowing it. Jesus says the truth will set you free. Truth is good. Truth is valuable. Truth is wonderful. The final thing I think that's important to know about discipleship and truth in particular is that truth requires doing, not just knowing. Truth requires doing, not just knowing. So, you know, there's so many people who say they know things. I had a really good friend who said that he knew how to swim, and he had seen lots of people swim, and he had watched YouTube videos on swimming, but he was born in the middle of the country, and he'd never been to the ocean, and so he'd never really done a lot of swimming. And so the first time he ever got into the water, he had watched all sorts of videos. He had seen all sorts of people swim, but when he actually hit the water, his actual self, he didn't actually know how to swim. Truth is incredibly important, and it involves not just knowing, but doing as well. There's truth that you learn through action. There's truth that has to be lived out. And when Jesus talks about the truth, that's what he's talking about. You know, every time I think about discipleship, I really think more than anything else about this powerful thing about parenting, how our kids mimic us all the time. And so we are teaching our kids not just by what we say, but by what we do. You know, I heard it said when I was first, when we were, my kids were very, very little, I heard somebody tell me that that I was going to show my daughter what kind of guy to date by how I treated her and how I treated her mom. That is a powerful statement, because I can say anything I want to my daughter. I can say anything about that I want to my son, but they will see who I am. They will see how I live. And that will speak far more loudly. And when we talk about discipleship, that kind of mimicking is a lot of what discipleship is all about. In the New Testament, the word disciple actually shows up 307 times. Most of the time about these 12 guys whom Jesus chose to teach and train really closely. And the culmination, the finishing of their teaching and training is Matthew 28:19, where Jesus says, "Therefore go and make disciples of all nations." So the idea is that he brought these 12 guys. He had them live with him really closely for years. They were in his daily life. They woke up where he woke up, and they went to sleep where he went to sleep, and they ate at the same table, and they walked along the same roads, and they chatted together, and they engaged with complicated ideas together, and they went to religious stuff together, and they went to family stuff together, and they did everything together. And so they were able to mimic Jesus in a really powerful way. They picked up things off of Jesus, not just what he said, but how he acted, who he was. And discipleship is the process of learning and applying the truth of Jesus to our lives. Let me say that again. Discipleship is the process of learning and applying the truth of Jesus to our lives. So when we talk about discipleship as men and women who don't have the privilege of spending every single day with Jesus for several years, when we talk about that, first of all, we have this incredible gift of the Gospels and the Bible in general that allows us to be shaped and formed by the truth of Jesus. And so when we talk about discipleship, one of the most essential things that we have to come to is a dedication to have an ongoing relationship with the Bible. You know, and I want you to think about where you're at with the Bible right now. Sometimes some folks they want to be followers of Jesus, but they really don't spend any more time with the Bible other than listening on Sundays, and that's about it. Other folks get a daily push notification from the Bible app, and so they read that one verse, and that's their verse for the day. Other folks spend 15 minutes reading the Bible a day, or other folks might spend half an hour reading the Bible a day, or some folks might be trying to read the Bible in a year, or wherever you're at, I want you to think about how you can make the Bible a bigger input into your life. See, I want you to think about this. Think about how much influence society gets on us in a given week. Every time you drive, our culture bombards you with signs. If you turn on music, it bombards you with messages and ideas and values. Whenever you are even in your house, there are all sorts of, or apartment or whatever, there are all sorts of different ways that society is bombarding you with messages, messages about what's normal, what's healthy, what's appropriate, what you deserve, what's right and what's wrong. There is an incessant flow of claims and arguments deep underneath the surface of our awareness that is happening every minute of every day. If we are going to be followers of Jesus, we need to passionately connect to the truth of the Word of God in a way that proactively stands against all of those other voices, all those other narratives, all those other inputs that are bombarding us every minute of every day. The Bible is God's revelation about himself. We know what is true about God from the Bible, and so we have to ask ourselves, how do we position ourselves as learners? And to be honest, when I think about this, one of the things I think is important for us to acknowledge is if we're going to make more room for the Bible in our lives, we probably need to take something out of our lives. So, for example, I wanted to make more room. I was just a couple of weeks ago, we were at a really great meeting that was a gathering of pastors in our area, and one of the national leaders of our movement came and spoke to us, and he spoke about the importance of being people of the Word of God. And I love the Bible, and I make time for the Bible all the time in my life, but I heard him talk, and I thought to myself, I need to take this more seriously. There is nothing more important for me to be reading right now than the Bible, so what do I need to do to make that happen? And I could just think to myself, well, I got to just squeeze it in somewhere. But in all honesty, if I'm going to make room for the Bible in my life, something else has to go out of my life. And so the thing I decided to take out right now was I read before bed every night, and sometimes I read a history book, or I'll read a novel, or whatever it is I want to read. And I just decided that for this time in my life, I'm going to stop reading all those other things right before bed in order to make another little spot in my life where I can read the Bible. In order to make room for the Bible, sometimes we have to be ready to let go of other things. So we have to connect ourselves with truth. Then second, we have to remain faithful. We have to remain faithful. And I'm not going to talk about this for a really long time, but I do want you to think about this. One of the things that is important about spiritual growth is that it's about little steps every single day, little decisions every day. So, for example, when I heard that leader speak about spending more time in the Word, I could have taken an entire day off and went and read the Bible for like 10 hours straight, and that would have been awesome. And I probably would not have been able to focus that long on anything. But, you know, I could have like mustered all my strength and decided that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to spend a whole day reading the Bible, and maybe I get 6 hours of reading the Bible in. But instead, I decided to just change one small thing in my life. And I'll be honest, it's not a drastic change. It's a 10-minute change in my life. I'm making just 10 minutes a day more room for the Bible. But that 10 minutes a day, if I make that habit not just today, if I make that decision, excuse me, not just today, but if I make that a habit not just for today, but for the rest of my life, that 10 or 15 extra minutes of reading the Bible is going to add up. It won't take it long to become more time than the 6 or 8 or 10 hours I could have done in one day of reading the Bible. And I'll tell you, it will definitely impact my life more significantly. It will create an ongoing conversation between me and the Bible. But this is the point. Faithfulness, you remember that verse we started with, it said, you are truly my disciples if you remain faithful to my teachings. It's not a question of what am I going to do today. It's a question of the habits I develop in my life. It's not a question of how am I going to use my time in the next 24 hours. It's a question of how am I going to prioritize the use of my time every day for the rest of my life. And if we're realistically asking, what am I going to do for the rest of my life? We need to make sure we make manageable changes. Changes that can actually be successful throughout time. So we need to connect with truth. We need to remain faithful to that truth. And then ultimately, we need to become imitators of Jesus. And we also need to make sure that we are imitators, not just of Jesus, but imitators of Jesus. I want to focus in on this for a moment. If you read the Gospels for any length of time, one of the things you'll see is that Jesus is constantly doing powerful and miraculous things. Powerful and miraculous. It seems like there is not a day that goes by that Jesus doesn't heal somebody.